Welcome to He's Gone But the Money's Not, the podcast that's all about empowering women and families to take control of their finances. I'm Nicole Roberts, a financial advisor with over a decade of experience. In this podcast, we explore the intersection of two important aspects of our lives, death and money. Each episode, we either talk through financial principles or have conversations with widows who bravely share their stories and wisdom. Why? Because statistically, most women will find themselves in a position where they become the sole financial decision maker in their family. It's time to build financial literacy and confidence. So, whether you're a widow, someone preparing for the future, or simply curious about the intersection of finances and life's uncertainties, you're in the right place. Let's dive into today's episode of He's Gone, But the Money's Not. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Nicole. I am your host. And today I have Bob Amott on the podcast with us. He is another advisor here at Rockhouse Financial and the founder of Rockhouse. And you may have heard in previous interviews, we have many widows who have mentioned Bob helped them a lot and he was their financial advisor. And we have Bob himself on the podcast today. So very excited to get his wisdom and learn about his experiences. Bob, tell us about yourself.
Well, certified financial planner. And I've been advising clients for coming up on 26 years. I started in the business in early 1998. And I spent some time with a large company and then went independent in 2005, started my own firm. And I love advising clients. It's just the greatest career in the world.
I agree.
So
you get to talk to people all day long and help them talk through their goals and their finances. It's great.
That's right. Yeah.
And today we want to talk about real estate investing. Most financial advisors really only talk about through stock market investing. I think this is where us being comprehensive financial planners sets us apart a little bit, in that we look at the whole picture and we are willing to look outside of just the investments that we can get paid on. And so tell us a little bit about real estate investing and the pros and cons of investing in real estate.
Okay, that's good. Let me start with a story. I'll tell you how I started with real estate, and it's actually how I got started with the stock market. So when I was 16 years old, I had a youth advisor who had me read the book, The Richest Man in Babylon. And in The Richest Man in Babylon, they espouse saving part of all you earn, right? The mantra in that book is, a part of all I earn is mine to keep. And so at the time I was working at Nielsen's frozen custard stand as a shift manager, selling ice cream cones three or four nights a week. And so every single payday, I would write that in my little day timer, my planner book. A part of all I earn is mine to keep. And on payday, I would take 20% of what I made and I would put it in a savings account. And so I started doing that when I was 16. And then after I had a couple of $100, I researched a mutual fund. And I started investing systematically in a mutual fund on a monthly basis. And so fast forward to when I'm 25 years old, I had enough saved through investing in the stock market and also through my employer stock purchase plan when I was working at Marriott. And these were $5 an hour days. So there wasn't a lot of money there. So fast forward 9 years, again, I'm 25 years old. I'm graduating from college. It's June of 1992. And I was married. I had a couple of little boys. Julie and I had been married in 1989. And I had $10,000 saved up. And we bought our first house.
Wow. And back then, $10,000 was a great down payment, right?
It was a great down payment. And just to put it into perspective, the home was in the low 70,000s. I should go try to find that document. I think it was 71,500. And my interest rate was 7.385%.
That's impressive. You remember that.
And so And I remember it because we were so thrilled to get such a low interest rate. And, you know, based on the last 20 years, that would not be considered a low interest rate at all. But we were very excited to have our own home. And it was definitively a starter home, just a little teeny box. But we were thrilled to have it. We bought that in 1992. In 1998, we moved. And I kept that house as a rental house. And we bought another house. And we lived there until 2005, about 6 years in that house. And then we spent 7 years in our next house. And when we moved from that house, I kept that house as a rental house. And we spent about 10 years in the next house. I didn't think we would ever move again. And when we moved, we kept that house as a rental house. And so I kind of fell into real estate investing in that way, where I became a landlord and had rental properties. At the same time, very early on in my career, I realized that I would be doing financial advising for the rest of my life because I loved it so much and I couldn't imagine myself doing anything else. At which point I thought, why am I writing, you know, checks out for several thousands of dollars every month to a landlord for a commercial building? I want to own my own real estate where I'm going to work for the rest of my life. And so I started looking for a building. And then one day happened upon this old rock house that we call home now.
Yeah, it's an old historic building.
Yeah.
And you completely redid it.
That was 15 years ago as well. And so in that respect, I'm my own landlord for the business as well. So from an early age, I thought it was important to have real estate and to own real estate. And it's turned out to be a good investment over the last 25 years for sure.
A lot of people need their previous home to put a down payment on their new home, especially as housing prices have gone up and now interest rates are going up. How are you able to not roll your equity from one house to the other?
It's saving. Saving in the stock market, buying mutual funds systematically. So I was able to save up money to do that. That's the case in three of the situations. In one of the purchases, it was during that time when they didn't care. They didn't do any verification of income and they did no verification of down payment or anything. So I was just able to get a loan. Like in 2005, 2006, the mortgage broker, you just signed your name. And I said, well, don't you need to like check my credit or check, verify my income? And they said, well, we could, but you know, it's only going to make like 0.01% difference on your mortgage. And I'm like, okay, then.
That's crazy. I didn't realize that was that wild back then.
It was that wild.
No wonder it all collapsed.
No one even asked. No one cared. So that led to the financial crisis in 08. Because you had
people. Giving anybody a loan. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more. You've worked with a lot of clients who also do real estate investing. So let's talk about the pros. Like why do real estate over something else? Why not have kept your money in the stock market?
Yeah, I think the main reason is a diversifier against the stock market. And so not always, but many times when the stock market is zigging, real estate is zagging. And so it acts as a stabilizing factor in your portfolio. And I think that's important. The other thing too is real estate's easy to stay invested in because you understand it. You understand that you own a building or you own a piece of property. And you know that there are costs to sell, right? So if you wanted to sell a property or buy a property, you're going to pay commissions, you're going to pay title insurance. It's going to take time and it's a process. And so it's easier to stay with it and to ride it through.
And also you don't get a statement that shows you the value of your home every month and well, that it's
yeah, and that,
going
that's,
up and down.
That's changing with Zillow. Where you can kind of look up your value every month, but still it's not immediately liquid, right? And if it is immediately liquid, you're going to take a bath on the price, right? You could sell a piece of property tomorrow, but somebody's going to take advantage of you because they figure you need the liquidity. Mm-hmm. So that's different than the stock market, where if you get panicky or concerned, you can just sell today. So it's a good way to not only diversify, but also keep you invested.
Manage your behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to manage your behavior. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. I think when people own their own house, they're consistently paying into their mortgage. It's like a forced savings.
Yeah.
That's why most Americans have most of their net worth in their home.
Yeah. And I, you know, that's one thing, as you mentioned this topic today, I wanted to talk about it. It is important that individuals and families own real estate, even if it's just their own home, because it gives a tremendous amount of security to the financial situation. So as we meet with clients, and I know that you've seen this as well, you meet with clients that have paid into a mortgage or have a paid off home, you know, over a 20 or 30 year period, they have a tremendous amount of stability in their financial forecast because they don't have increasing housing costs. And we've run into this a couple of times with clients where, you know, you'll have someone who's 80 years old, right? And maybe their husband has died or a spouse has died. And their kids are like, well, why don't you sell your house? It's too much to take care of. And we'll move you into this retirement community. And you're going to be able to live there. And you're going to be able to have friends and social network. And it's going to be great. But that can be a mistake if the time horizon for that client is 10 or 15 years. Because what's going to happen to the cost of that retirement center over the next 10 years? Well, if history's any gauge, the cost of that is going to double. Whereas if they would have stayed in their home, the cost of maintaining the home would not have doubled. Certainly property taxes go up, and once in a while you have to do repairs and everything else like that. So one mistake that I've seen is people make a lifestyle decision and sell all their real estate too early in life. And then the expenses of living catch up because inflation overtakes their ability to pay, you know, or their big liquidity that they had when they sold their real estate or their other assets. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important that people stay invested in real estate, even if they're going. So I'm not opposed to that lifestyle choice of going to move to the retirement center. If that's the right move, then that's the right move. But the client should still maintain or retain some investment in real estate so that they keep up with inflation over time.
Yeah, it's a great inflation hedge. So yeah. And so owning your own home is important. What about owning beyond your own home? I personally am not that excited about real estate investing because I've had a lot of experiences of things going wrong, breaking, or repairs.
Total hassle. It's a total hassle. And like I mentioned, you know, every single home we've ever owned, we've kept as a rental. And yeah, total disasters. I mean, tenants are tenants for a reason. It's because they can't buy a home. They don't have the financial wherewithal. They don't have the discipline. So you get stiffed on payments. You have to evict people. I had a tenant once who decided to fix the kitchen sink. So they installed a new disposal, but they didn't do any of the plumbing correctly. And so over the course of 2 months, that all of that plumbing leakage from the kitchen just spread into the whole basement ceiling. Whoa. Right? And then they called me and said, oh yeah, we've got a water issue. Well, I didn't even know that they had done the disposal repair because they didn't tell me. And so, yeah, we had to redo the whole basement because of a bad tenant decision. And it's impossible to sue them for that or to recover those monies because they don't have money. One time I went over to a tenant and I was just checking in. It was Christmas time. You know, I stopped by with a little poinsettia or something saying, hey, you know, how are you doing? It's like, yeah, our furnace is broken. This is the middle of December. Well, so I said, the furnace is broken. Well, why didn't you call me? Well, we didn't bother. I'm like, well, how long has it been broken? Well, since before Thanksgiving.
Oh, geez.
Luckily, it had been a warm December, or I could have had frozen pipes or all kinds of other issues. And so I called a service repairman, and they went over, and it was a little solenoid electronic item that costs $35, you know, but tenants are tenants. And so, and they're tenants for a reason.
Yeah. My parents had a rental and the guy quit paying and it took them months to evict him.
Yeah.
And during that time, those months when he wasn't paying and he knew he was getting evicted, he trashed the place. Like they had to totally gut it and redo it. Like carpet, new paint, new light fixtures.
Oh no,
all new furniture.
Every time a tenant moves out, it's new carpet and paint. And so that's one of the things that I think a lot of people don't realize. They get overextended or they get too skinny on their rental unit, right? Where maybe the rent is just barely covering the mortgage and they don't have enough in reserves to handle multiple months of non-collectible rent and then several thousands of dollars in repairs every time a tenant moves out. So one of the key things to do is if you're going to do it, realize what you're biting off in terms of hassle, and then also have an adequate reserve. I think we've had a few clients get caught up, you know, in this whole frenzy of buying property and renting it and mortgaging it up and levering it. And then suddenly they have multiple properties, but they're too thin on their reserves. And in 2008, that really bit a couple of people. They had to declare bankruptcy. So
wow. So when markets go bad, that's when it really,
yeah,
really can hurt you too.
That's right.
And real estate markets can be volatile. They can go up and down. I think a lot of people have seen this run recently, the last, you know, 10, 20 years. And they see that, oh, the market will always go up, or that real estate over the long run is a good investment.
Yeah, and I think there are pockets where it gets hurt. I think of Orange County in Southern California during the late 90s and early 2000s, you know, where home prices ran way up and then fell by 40%. And the tendency then, of course, is to, and I think that might be happening right now, except interest rates are mitigating this, high interest rates are mitigating this, where they'll go out and refinance all of the equity out of the house. Okay, so you bought a house for $500,000, now it's valued at $1 million, and you go take $300,000 out of the house and you go spend it, or you go buy another property, or you go do something with it, and then the value of the house falls from $1 million to $600,000. But you owe $800,000 on it. And so that's very problematic.
Yeah, just a lot of risk involved with doing that.
And so you've just got to be really wise about your debt management and your cash flow management.
Mm. On properties, do you feel like the cash flow of the properties you've done or you've seen clients do, is the cash flow usually pretty good on the properties?
No. The cash flow is barely break even. And so what you're counting on is if the cash flows break even, you're going to make a little bit of money on depreciation tax savings because you get to depreciate the property when you turn it into a rental. And that might save you a few thousand dollars a year on taxes. And then you're going to make it on appreciation. Hopefully it appreciates. There is an argument right now being made by a few economists that because of the way people are able to work remotely, that real estate prices won't go up the way they've gone up in the past. There's going to be less pressure on housing prices. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. It's possible. I'm not sure it's probable. To me, it seems like real estate would always go up. But there are a few economists making that argument. And so depreciation, appreciation, and then finally, what you mentioned earlier is that, okay, if you're making a monthly payment on it, then you're paying down that mortgage. So it's kind of a forced savings. So between those three things, you know, usually you can push the rate of return on a real estate investment up into the low double digits, which is a great return. But again, you have to be able to ride out all these storms and also deal with all the hassle.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people want to do real estate because of the passive income. They hear that a lot on other podcasts or other articles, or I've seen on social media. Let's build your passive income, own real estate. But you're saying that most of the time the cash flow is covering expenses.
If you have a mortgage, and then like currently, let's say, you know, in today's environment, let's say you went out and bought a $500,000 home for cash, no mortgage. And what could you rent that for? Well, you might be able to rent it for $2,000 a month or $2,500 a month in our market here in Salt Lake City. And it depends on what county and all of that. But let's say that you could rent it for $2,000 a month. That's $24,000 a year gross. And out of that $24,000 a year, you're gonna have to pay property tax. You're gonna have to pay landlord insurance, right? So maybe you end up making $20,000 a year in cash flow off your $500,000 investment. That's a 4% return on your money. And money markets right now are paying over 5. And so is that a good investment for your cash? Not in the short term.
But over the long term, you're expecting that $500,000 to grow to $1 million,
right,
or whatever it might be.
That's right. Yeah. So maybe you get appreciation over time. You definitely get depreciation. So you're going to make another $3,000 or $4,000 in depreciation,
tax savings,
and then also, well, in that case, there's no mortgage pay down. So
let's talk about liquidity then. So let's say then your $500,000's grown to be, let's say, $1.2 million. You have $700,000 gain on that. What's the play there?
The play is to either increase rents so that you get an adequate rate of return on your $1.2 million asset, which in the current environment, that's hard to do, or you move it into another property, or you cash it out and pay tax. There's a really unique area of the tax law called the 1031 exchange that allows you to exchange property into another similar type of property and defer the tax. So it's called a 1031 exchange. And so you could move the $1.2 million into another property and not pay tax on the $700,000.
Mm-hmm. And we have another episode on taxes of selling real estate. Mm. If people want to go take a listen, we get into more of the details on that.
Good.
And I think a big thing that I've seen with clients is, I had a client I worked with who had built up all of their portfolio in real estate. They were not very excited about the stock market. It was very unknown to them. They were great landlords. They had bought some great properties and they had bought at great times. And so it really paid off for them. And so they just saw no value in ever investing in the stock market. But then they wanted to retire and they had no liquidity and their rentals were not enough to cover their expenses, their lifestyle, and their properties had appreciated a lot. So there were a lot of big taxes there and they liked all their properties. They're just really hesitant to sell.
Yeah.
That's another big issue I've seen is liquidity issues.
Yeah. The other thing that comes in line with that is when you're young and vibrant and in a growth mentality, you don't mind being a landlord. But at some point, I've seen this time and time and time again with clients. And whether it's at age 60 or 65 or 70 or even age 80, at some point you don't want to be a landlord anymore. You don't want to collect rent. You don't want to evict people. You don't want to fix toilets. You don't want to repaint an apartment or condo or whatever it is. And so your options are to either sell, pay the tax, move to a 1031 program of some kind, or hire a management company. And the management company is going to take 8 to 10% on a long-term rental, and they may take 20 or 30% on short-term rentals of your total rent, which eats into your cash flow even more.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you would talk about the pros or cons of owning real estate?
I think I'll get a little wonky here, but I think one of the big things clients should do and every individual should do is they should take a look at what is their macro investment plan. So, and we'll do this with a lot of our clients that own real estate. We'll say, okay, how much real estate is enough? And maybe it's a third, right? You want a third of all of your investments in real estate. Well, then we'll manage that and we'll look at that on a year, every year or two, and say, okay, how much real estate do we now own? Particularly after the last run up, where it's like, well, okay, well, now your portfolio is 50% in real estate. So you're losing some liquidity options. And so if we manage to a percentage, then that's a good way of looking at it. So maybe you have a third of your money in retirement assets, and you've got a third of your money just in regular stock market type investments, and you've got a third of your money in real estate. And I don't know that a third is the right answer. Every individual is different. But if you have a target, then you manage to that target, and you'd have good strategic reasons for not exceeding that, right? And it might be management, it might be liquidity, it might be taxation. Maybe you're okay having more real estate because to liquidate any of the real estate is going to be too much of a tax hassle.
Yeah, and if you wait until you pass away, your kids get the step up in basis and they get the property.
That's right. And so that's another thing we've seen with clients, you know, is they want to simplify the financial life of the surviving spouse. And so they'll liquidate everything to simplify for the spouse, but in the process trigger all kinds of taxes. Sometimes that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Or even as they get older, wanting to simplify.
That's
and
right.
It triggers taxes. And
that's right.
So, well, is there anything else that you want to mention before we wrap up?
It goes back to the old adage, right? I mean, when is the right time to buy real estate? And it's probably now, wherever you are. Like, you know, if you're a young person, you should probably buy real estate as quickly and as soon as you can. And if you're older, you shouldn't sell your real estate thinking, oh, I'm only going to live for another 5 years, because you might live another 15 years. And you're going to have to keep up with the inflation costs. So I would say, you know, in that regard, particularly for young people, and I think over the last 3 years, there was a big rush to buy real estate while the interest rates were low and during the pandemic. You should only buy real estate if you're going to be there for 5 years or more. It's not worth all the costs to buy real estate. So it's a long-term hold. Are you going to do it for 5 years or more? Are you going to ride that thing out? Are you going to live there for more than 5 years? Okay, go ahead and buy it. But if it's a less than 5-year time horizon, maybe you don't. Maybe you wait. But nevertheless, you should have some of your money in real estate, whether that's directly owned to your home, whether it's an investment property that you own and manage, or whether it's through a stock market type of investment known as a real estate investment trust. You can own liquid real estate, you know, through the stock market, through real estate investment trusts. But a portion of your portfolio should be in real estate.
That's great. And I think a big takeaway here today that I got was it can be very complex to own real estate. Many people think, oh, they view real estate as the easier investment because they understand it better. They see other people do it and make a lot of money that way. I think the big thing that people come to me and say is, oh, my neighbor did this or my parents did this and they made a lot of money. And so it's much easier to see this, how that real estate investment works than a stock market investment or other types.
Yeah, it's tangible. Mm-hmm. I mean, you grew up on a potato farm in Idaho, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I could look at that farm and say, oh, that's easy. I buy some land, I plant some potatoes, I harvest the potatoes. That's easy.
Right. There's much more complexity to it and things that go wrong.
It's way harder than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that analogy. Creating a long-term plan, right? Mm-hmm. Of how your real estate fits in with your other investments and with your finances and your situation is really key to owning real estate. And then understanding the complexities.
Yeah. And being okay with the complexities and understanding the risk. I think far too many people don't understand the risk. They don't understand the cash flow risk, or they don't understand the liquidity risk, or just the hassle.
One more question. You have a property manager for a lot of your properties. Does that take away a lot of the hassle?
Yeah, that's been spectacular.
Yeah. You just got to pay for it, right? Cuts into your returns.
I pay 8%, and I'm just grateful to pay them 8% because they screen all my tenants. They collect the rents. They evict people, right? When the people have cats and the cats pee on all the brand new carpet, you know, they sue the tenant for new carpet, and I don't have to deal with any of that.
Yeah. That's great. That's great.
I love cats, by the way.
Right. That's very sarcastic. All right. Well, Bob, thank you for coming and sharing some of your experiences with us today. And people can find more information about Rock House on our website. And you can also go to our Instagram page to find out more information on this episode. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of He's Gone, But the Money's Not. If you'd like to explore more about the podcast or discover additional resources related to financial planning, please visit our website at rockhousefinancial.com. And remember, your financial journey is unique, but you don't have to navigate it alone. Feel free to reach out to us for financial planning services tailored to your specific needs. Once again, thank you for being part of our community. We look forward to having you back for more inspiring stories and practical financial wisdom on He's Gone, But the Money's Not.
Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Rockhouse Financial is an SEC registered investment advisor, and the opinions expressed on this show do not reflect the opinions of Rockhouse Financial or any other sponsors of the podcast. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.